Chapter 12. Task-Relevant Maturity. I'll say again that a manager's most important responsibility is to elicit top performance from his subordinates. Assuming we understand what motivates an employee, the question becomes, is there a single best management style? One approach that will work better than all others? Many have looked for that optimum. Considering the issue historically, the management style most in favor seems to have changed to parallel the theory of motivation espoused at the time. At the turn of the century, ideas about work were simple. People were told what to do, and if they did it, they were paid. If they did not, they were fired. The corresponding leadership style was crisp and hierarchical. There were those who gave orders, and those who took orders and executed them without question. In the 1950s, management theory shifted toward a humanistic set of beliefs that held that there was a nicer way to get people to work. The favored leadership style changed accordingly. Finally, as university behavioral science departments developed and grew, the theories of motivation and leadership became subjects of carefully controlled experiments. Surprisingly, none of the early intuitive presumptions could be borne out. The hard findings simply would not show that one style of leadership was better than another. It was hard to escape the conclusion that no optimal management style existed. My own observations bear this out. At Intel, we frequently rotate middle managers from one group to another in order to broaden their experience. These groups tend to be similar in background and in the type of work that they do, although their output tends to vary greatly. Some managers and their groups demonstrate themselves to be higher producers. Others do not. The result of moving the managers about is often surprising. Neither the managers nor the groups maintain the characteristic of being either high-producing or low-producing as the managers are switched around. The inevitable conclusion is that high output is associated with particular combinations of certain managers and certain groups of workers. This also suggests that a given managerial approach is not equally effective under all conditions. Some researchers in this field argue that there is a fundamental variable that tells you what the best management style is in a particular situation. That variable is the task-relevant maturity, TRM, of the subordinates, which is a combination of the degree of their achievement orientation and readiness to take responsibility, as well as their education, training, and experience. Moreover, all this is very specific to the task at hand, and it is entirely possible for a person or a group of people to have a TRM that is high in one job but low in another. Let me give you an example of what I mean. We recently moved an extremely productive sales manager from the field into the plant, where he was placed in charge of a factory unit. The size and scope of the two jobs were comparable, yet the performance of the seasoned manager deteriorated, and he started to show the signs of someone overwhelmed by his work. What happened was that while the personal maturity of the manager obviously did not change, his task-relevant maturity in the new job was extremely low, since its environment, content, and tasks were all new to him. In time, he learned to cope, and his TRM gradually increased. With that, his performance began to approach the outstanding levels he had exhibited earlier, which was why we promoted him in the first place. What happened here should have been totally predictable, yet we were surprised. We confused the manager's general competence and maturity with his task-relevant maturity. Similarly, a person's TRM can be very high given a certain level of complexity, uncertainty, and ambiguity, but if the pace of the job accelerates, or if the job itself abruptly changes, the TRM of that individual will drop. It's a bit like a person with many years' experience driving on small country roads being suddenly asked to drive on a crowded metropolitan freeway. His TRM driving his own car will drop precipitously. The conclusion is that varying management styles are needed as task-relevant maturity varies. Specifically, when the TRM is low, the most effective approach is one that offers very precise and detailed instructions, wherein the supervisor tells the subordinate what needs to be done, when, and how. In other words, a highly structured approach. As the TRM of the subordinate grows, the most effective style moves from the structured to one more given to communication, emotional support, and encouragement, in which the manager pays more attention to the subordinate as an individual than to the task at hand. As the TRM becomes even greater, the effective management style changes again. Here, the manager's involvement should be kept to a minimum and should primarily consist of making sure that the objectives toward which the subordinate is working are mutually agreed upon. But regardless of what the TRM may be, the manager should always monitor a subordinate's work closely enough to avoid surprises. The presence or absence of monitoring, as we've said before, is the difference between a supervisor's delegating a task and abdicating it. Here are the characteristics of the effective management style for the supervisor given the varying degrees of TRM. Task-relevant maturity of subordinate, low. Characteristics of the effective management style, structured, task-oriented, tell what, when, how. Task-relevant maturity of subordinate, medium. Characteristics of the effective management style, individual-oriented, emphasis on two-way communication, support, mutual reasoning. Task-relevant maturity of subordinate, high. Characteristics of the effective management style, involvement by manager, minimal, establishing objectives and monitoring. A word of caution is in order. Do not make a value judgment and consider a structured management style less worthy than a communication-oriented one. What is nice or not nice should have no place in how you think or what you do. Remember, we are after what is most effective. The theory here parallels the development of the relationship between a parent and child. As the child matures, the most effective parental style changes, varying with the life-relevant maturity, or age, of the child. A parent needs to tell a toddler not to touch things that he might break or that might hurt him. The child cannot understand that the vase he wants to play with is an irreplaceable heirloom, but he can understand no. As he grows older, he begins to do things on his own initiative, something the parent wants to encourage while still trying to keep him from injuring himself. A parent might suggest, for example, that his child give up his tricycle for his first two-wheeler. The parent will not simply send him out on his own, but will accompany him to keep the bicycle from tipping over while talking to him about safety on the streets. As the child's maturity continues to grow, the parent can cut back on specific instruction. When the child goes out to ride his bicycle, the parent no longer has to recite the litany of safety rules. Finally, when the life-relevant maturity of the child is high enough, he leaves home and perhaps goes away to college. At this point, the relationship between parent and child will change again as the parent merely monitors the child's progress. Should the child's environment suddenly change to one where his life-relevant maturity is inadequate, for example, if he runs into severe academic trouble, the parent may have to revert to a style used earlier. As parental or managerial supervision moves from structured to communicating to monitoring, the degree of structure governing the behavior of the child or the subordinate does not really change. A teenager knows it is not safe to cross a busy interstate highway on his bicycle, and the parent no longer has to tell him not to do it. Structure moves from being externally imposed to being internally given. If the parent or supervisor imparted early on to the child or subordinate the right way to do things, the correct operational values, later the child would be likely to make decisions the way the parent would. In fact, commonality of operational values, priorities, and preferences, how an organization works together, is a must if the progression in managerial style is to occur. Without that commonality, an organization can become easily confused and lose its sense of purpose. Accordingly, the responsibility for transmitting common values rests squarely with the supervisor. He is, after all, accountable for the output of the people who report to him. Then, too, without a shared set of values, a supervisor cannot effectively delegate. An associate of mine, who had always done an outstanding job, hired a junior person to handle some old tasks, while he himself took on some new ones. The subordinate did poor work. My associate's reaction? He has to make his own mistakes. That's how he learns. The problem with this is that the subordinate's tuition is paid by his customers, and that is absolutely wrong. The responsibility for teaching the subordinate must be assumed by his supervisor and not paid for by the customers of his organization, internal or external. Management style and managerial leverage. As supervisors, we should try to raise the task-relevant maturity of our subordinates as rapidly as possible for obvious pragmatic reasons. The appropriate management style for an employee with high TRM takes less time than detailed, structured supervision requires. Moreover, once operational values are learned and TRM is high enough, the supervisor can delegate tasks to the subordinate, thus increasing his managerial leverage. Finally, at the highest levels of TRM, the subordinate's training is presumably complete, and motivation is likely to come from within, from self-actualization, which is the most powerful source of energy and effort a manager can harness. As we've learned, a person's TRM depends on a specific working environment. When that changes, so will his TRM, as will his supervisor's most effective management style. Let's consider an army encampment where nothing ever happens. The sergeant in command has come to know each of his soldiers very well, and by and large maintains an informal relationship with them. The routines are so well established that he rarely has to tell anyone what to do. Appropriate to the high TRM of the group, the sergeant contents himself with merely monitoring their activity. One day, a jeep load of the enemy suddenly appears, coming over the hill and shooting at the camp. Instantly, the sergeant reverts to a structured, task-oriented leadership style, barking orders at everyone, telling each of his soldiers what to do, when, and how. After a while, if these skirmishes continue and the group keeps on fighting from the same place for a couple of months, this too will eventually become routine. With that, the TRM of the group for the new task, fighting, will increase. The sergeant can then gradually ease off telling everybody what to do. Put another way, a manager's ability to operate in a style based on communication and mutual understanding depends on there being enough time for it. Though monitoring is on paper a manager's most productive approach, we have to work our way up to it in the real world. Even if we achieve it, if things suddenly change, we have to revert quickly to the what, when, how mode. That mode is one that we don't think an enlightened manager should use. As a result, we often don't take it up until it is too late and events overwhelm us. We managers must learn to fight such prejudices and regard any management mode not as either good or bad, but rather as effective or not effective, given the TRM of our subordinates within a specific working environment. This is why researchers cannot find the single best way for a manager to work. It changes day by day, and sometimes hour by hour. It's not easy to be a good manager. Deciding the TRM of your subordinates is not easy. Moreover, even if a manager knows what the TRM is, his personal preferences tend to override the logical and proper choice of management style. For instance, Even if a manager sees that his subordinate's TRM is medium, in the real world, the manager will likely opt for either the structured or minimal style. In other words, we want either to be fully immersed in the work of our subordinates, making their decisions, or to leave them completely alone, not wanting to be bothered. Another problem here is a manager's perception of himself. We tend to see ourselves more as communicators and delegators than we really are, certainly much more than do our subordinates. I tested this conclusion by asking a group of managers to assess the management style of their supervisors, and then by asking those supervisors what they thought their style was. Some 90% of the supervisors saw their style as more communicating or delegating than their subordinates' view. What accounts for the large discrepancy? It is partly because managers think of themselves as perfect delegators, but also, sometimes a manager throws out suggestions to a subordinate who receives them as marching orders, furthering the difference in perceptions. A manager once told me that his supervisor definitely practiced an effective communicating style with him because they skied and drank together. He was wrong. There is a huge distinction between a social relationship and a communicating management style, which is a caring involvement in the work of the subordinate. Close relationships off the job may help to create an equivalent relationship on the job, but they should not be confused. Two people I knew had a supervisor-subordinate relationship. They spent 1 week each year by themselves, fishing in a remote area. When fishing, they never talked about work, it being tacitly understood that work was off conversational limits. Oddly enough, their work relationship remained distant, their personal friendship having no effect on it. This brings us to the age-old question of whether friendship between supervisor and subordinate is a good thing. Some managers unhesitatingly assert that they never permit social relationships to develop with people they work with. In fact, there are pluses and minuses here. If the subordinate is a personal friend, the supervisor can move into a communicating management style quite easily. But the what, when, how mode becomes harder to revert to when necessary. It's unpleasant to give orders to a friend. I've seen several instances where a supervisor had to make a subordinate friend toe a disciplinary line. In one case, a friendship was destroyed. In another, the supervisor's action worked out because the subordinate felt, thanks to the strength of the social relationship, that the supervisor was looking out for his, the subordinate's, professional interests. Everyone must decide for himself what is professional and appropriate here. A test might be to imagine yourself delivering a tough performance review to your friend. Do you cringe at the thought? If so, don't make friends at work. If your stomach remains unaffected, you are likely to be someone whose personal relationships will strengthen work relationships.